Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
How you feeling today, Dad?
Oh, quite festival.
Festival? Is that a word? Festival?
No, it's festival? Evil. Festivic.
Or are you evil and you're festive because you're evil?
Start from the beginning.
How do you feel today, Dad?
Quite good, thank
you. Quite good, thank you. Are you sure?
Yes, I'm happy to start season two.
Well, this is not going to be the first episode.
Ah, so I'm happy to start not the episode of season two.
Welcome to Spies and Lies, an espionage podcast, co-hosted by me, Omri Rose, and my dear old dad, Jason, a retired former spy master of one of the top intelligence agencies in the world. Without further ado, let's dive into today's episode, The Mystery of Agent 355, the Lady of the Revolution. August 17th, 1779. George Washington's two-story stone house headquarters in New Windsor, New York. An urgent knock on the door sounds. George Washington, sat over his desk, reviewing plans and correspondences, looks over his shoulder towards the heavy wooden door.
Enter.
The door opens as a windswept officer steps forward, reaching into his jacket to produce a sealed envelope.
General Washington, sir, a message.
The envelope exchanges hands as George Washington quickly identifies the seal.
Thank you, Sergeant. Get some rest.
The officer departs as Washington breaks the seal and begins reading the contents of the letter. A coded message from his chief spy, Abraham Woodhull, dated August 15th, 1779. Among the information inside, a single sentence has echoed through time and caused a mystery. I intend to visit 727 before long and think by the assistance of a 355 of my acquaintance, shall be able to outwit them all. 727 was code for New York. As for 355, that meant lady.
Dun, dun, dun. And so the mystery begins that has echoed over time.
Any thoughts so far?
Well, the use of codes and not revealing the real person is something that's very important for the continuity of keeping the safety of your agents. So it's interesting how they did it here, how they used it, and what sort of methods they used to make it happen. So I think we'll be talking about that in this episode.
I mean, there's a lot to say, really. We should just dive in, I guess.
Dive in, and then I'll comment as I usually do on some of these topics.
As you usually do?
As I usually do.
All right. So the background to this little espionage escapade began in, the month of July in 1776, when the United States, then the British colonies in the Americas, declared independence. The Declaration of Independence was signed, officially starting the American Revolutionary War against the British Empire, which had formerly ruled over the American colonies, 13 at the time, from Georgia to Maine on the east coast of the United States. Approximately 45% of the population of the colonies supported the independence, 15 to 20% supported British rule, while about 35 to 40 were undecided. Percent, not people. I mean, yes. There were a little bit more than 200 people at the time, so.
I hope so.
Just a few more. Otherwise, the British would have had a much easier time of it. Though, that said, things did not start well. The American Revolution loses the Battle of Long Island, losing control of New York and Long Island to the British, as George Washington, the American Revolution's top general, flees with his smaller and outgunned army to avoid capture. The British began using New York as their headquarters. We're talking about Manhattan, primarily.
George Washington knew he needed to find out what was going on in New York and couldn't muscle the British, right? I mean, he had a smaller force. Yeah, the British Empire was controlling half of the known world. They said, the sun never sets on the British Empire, as they said. Didn't they say that? They did say that. Yes. And so he had to outsmart them. As our old friend Sun Tzu said, you need to win the battles before fighting them. And so George Washington tasks Nathaniel Sackett to create a network of spies. But because of a lack of progress that he found with Nathaniel, he then later tasked Benjamin Talmadge to be the head of the network of spies that he created. Benjamin Talmadge became the code name 721, his alias John Bolton. Benjamin Talmadge then recruited only those he could trust, turning to his childhood friends in his hometown of Setauket, New York, including Abraham Woodhull, who became Samuel Culper Sr., codenamed 722. He was a simple farmer, unsuspected to be a spy. Later, he had frequent trips into New York, which made him suspicious to the British. So, they recruited a relative, Robert Townsend, also known as Culper Jr. Culper Sr., Culper Jr. He was a merchant in New York, and his code name was 723. So we had 721, 722, now we have 723. The story goes that Robert Townsend, Culper Jr., was in love with our mysterious Agent 355. It's said that he posed as a Tory journalist, a Tory being a supporter of the British, and that's how he was able to move around and gather intelligence. Also, we had Austin Rowe, a pub owner, who was able to go in and out of New York to get supplies, seeing as he owned a pub. He was, drumroll, 724. We see a trend here. Then we had Caleb Brewster. He was a whaleboat captain who agreed to be a courier and send and relay messages. He was, that's right, you guessed it, 725. What do you think of the code names so far, Dad?
Well, as you said it, if you have 721, 722, and 725, 726, that means you know there's some people to find. You know there's other people there. So obviously, if one gets caught, it would be easier to find the next, or you know you have to find others because there's others around. So it's not so random. On the other hand, it makes it easier for, I would say, bookkeeping, because there was no computers in those days, so I suppose to keep track of everybody. Mm-hmm. Did each one know there were others? That is not 100% clear, although some of them did work together as a network. Right. And then when you're working as a network, it has other problems, and we'll probably discuss that later.
I'm reminded of this thing that was like a joke in my senior year that was this legendary senior prank, which is you release two pigs into the school and then they have to catch them. On one pig, the number one is drawn, and on the other pig, the number three is drawn. And so eventually, obviously, supposedly the idea is that they would catch the two pigs, but then we have one and three, but where's two? But there was never a number two pig released. But it creates that mystery. So I'm wondering, you know, you have 721, 722, 723, and they all corresponded to a person. I mean, you'd think maybe it would have been thought to, like, leave some blanks just to confuse things, potentially.
I don't know about the pigs, because that's a prank in your school. And
it never actually happened, to be clear.
Okay, someone doesn't know how to count, and they went from one to three. What school did you go to, by the way, that didn't know how to count? But that's beside the point. I probably sent you there, so that was my problem. But that's not the issue. The issue is, you're right. If each one knew he has a specific number, then everybody knows he has a number. The pigs didn't know there was number.
The pigs didn't know there was number two.
They didn't know they're numbered.
No.
But if everybody else knew about everybody else, you have a network. When you have a network, one falls, probably most of them fall. And that's right. One of the big dangers when you have running networks.
I think one of the brilliant things about the Soviet networks during the Cold War era is that they were not so centralized. Like, each group operated kind of in its own kind of little cell, right? And that gave it more protection, so that if one fell,
that's what you do. Yeah. But if you have one handler who handles them all, and in this case, there was one guy that handled them all.
Yeah, one guy on the top, yeah.
And he was the one that knows everything, then here's your weakest link.
Right.
Because he can reveal everybody.
And but to get to the guy on top is...
It's not so difficult in those days because, you know...
It's a person.
It's a person, and they didn't report to two other people that reported to two other people or another person. So it's not clear even today how direct was the contact between the guy in the top and the actual people.
Right. I mean, Benjamin Talmadge, who was the head, the chief spy, you know, he reported to Washington...
but he wasn't the guy going out into the field. So already we have this designation of roles as well. And I suppose, to be a little bit more morbid about it, if you would lose people, you wouldn't necessarily replace those numbers because they might still be relevant. So then you would get those holes and the opponents might not necessarily know that those numbers are gone. Anyway, pigs.
We'll leave those, we'll put them on the side.
Right. So back to the Culper Ring, as this spy network was called. So Talmadge creates the Culper Code to send messages, as we've been discussing. It was a list of 763 numbers representing words, places, and names. In order of the alphabet, 1 through 41 were words that started with the letter A. 42 to 72 were words that started with the letter B. So, for instance, I don't remember which one it was exactly, but, you know, if you go to the list, let's say number 32 would be ammo, which would be a relevant word that they might use in that time. And so instead of writing ammo, you could just write 32, and then maybe B, you would write 47. So 32 being brought to 47, and 47 would be Boston, let's say. So then you know that ammo is being brought to Boston, et cetera, et cetera. Until we get to 711. Now, 711 through 726 were proper names, as we've been discussing above. You know, specific agents, specific people. Now, spies were what they were called. The term agent is anachronistic, but for our modern times, it's kind of helpful to maybe use that term. So they were coded at 700 plus, right? So 711 to 726. Without having this number code, you really would not know what the numbers meant unless you managed to crack it somehow, which I'm sure people might have tried if they had access to it. I mean, you know, you have the Turing code, for instance, in World War II and everything. I mean, one of the things I love is that the Americans used Navajo languages in World War II because there were so few Navajo speakers and you had the Navajo code breakers. It was very cool stuff.
Yeah. Correct.
So
very clever as well.
Coding is very important. And better than that, they devised something better than those limeys, as the British were called back then. My apologies to any British person taking offense to that term. The British used lemon and lime juice, hence maybe why they were called limeys. I don't know. Maybe not. But they used that for their invisible ink, which was revealed when heated. Now, the Culper Ring wanted to one-up the British, and so they hired a doctor with access to certain medicines to create a unique invisible ink from gallic acid, which was only revealed when ferrous sulfide was rubbed over the parchment. So this is a much more complex invisible ink kind of thing. Though, that said, if you receive a parcel with a bunch of letters rolled up in a courier and there's nothing written on them, I think you'll suspect something's there and you'll try to find a way. But
you know, looking, I'm listening to what you're saying, and I was did some research on it to see more about this, and it's not clear to me 100% where the messages went to and who got the final paper in a readable situation. Mm-hmm. So if we go back to your first statement in Washington, he got a message, a letter coming from someone mm-hmm. who already felt safe to write something, but it wasn't in ink or anything like that. I mean, he had to take it, rewrite it, or he actually gave the message as is. Not 100% clear as well if everyone in the network knew how to use these equipment. Or was this only used to go from, let's say, from Benjamin to Washington, or from Benjamin to somewhere else, or to Benjamin? So did every one of the agents use this? It's not clear.
So again, we're using the term agents,
a little sources, or whatever, but the person who wrote
information. But I do want to specify that like the numbered 711 through 726, the spies, let's call them more traditionally.
Yes.
I would say they probably were aware of the code. Maybe they didn't have the full breakdown of the code. And we have no way of knowing this.
No, but did they have the ink? Did all of them use ink?
No, I don't think so.
I don't think so.
I think you know, certain information was relayed to certain people and they were the writers of the different things. But again, we have no way of specifically knowing this. Whereas if we use our anachronistic term of agent, people maybe working with these named spies, they wouldn't know this for sure.
Because if one gets caught
right
with this equipment.
Correct. It's
then,
all
then,
gone.
Then the British will know that this equipment is used, and then they'll look for it at the next people and be able to reveal very quickly
what
was
written.
And by
you mean cipher, right? The code.
The moment they get it, and they'll, you know, they tortured people. Amnesty wasn't around then. And
I mean, there were rules of law. As
the rules
of law,
you tell me what you know, or we hang you, or we chop off some.
I mean, it was certainly more barbaric. Yes.
Yes, it wasn't very polite.
It was not
okay.
Very polite.
Sat on a high chair.
Right.
Again, it's not clear who used it and at what stage of the message delivery was it used. I would think that the agents, you had to train them as well to do it, and that's not clear as well if that happened.
Well, training as
or
we've
spying.
Come... Look, as we've been exploring yes. throughout all of our podcast episodes so far, training, especially in the past before kind of formalized things were established, was very minimal a lot of times, especially now if you look at this situation where we have the Revolutionary War, it thrust upon it. You know, there wasn't necessarily a big run-up to this where people were planning, and so we created the spy network on the fly. We need this, recruiting people, don't have time to train, you got a, you know, trial by fire kind of situation.
Look, he had to invent a lot of things. One of the most important things he decided, Benjamin I'm talking about, that he is going to use only people he trusts. He's not going to take a lot of people. He's only going to take people from his hometown, people who he knows will be loyal to him in some ways.
Right.
Who will not betray him, because obviously at that stage, everybody could be betrayed or turned.
Sure.
And he decided not to. So he only used very specific people.
And not a lot of them. Again, 7/11 to 7/26, the named spies. Now, again, the agent term being anachronistic, maybe there were people helping them on different things, but the official spies...
Now, maybe they had other people telling him things or they were seeing things.
Right.
Now, he recruited them, you could say, and they were willing to work with him.
Mm-hmm.
And that for him, that's the security that he needed.
Right.
The next thing he said, okay, how am I making it more secure? Mm-hmm. Because I'm passing on messages, not verbally. That means I'm sending a message onwards. I have to protect the message, because otherwise, why write all these things?
Right.
Why use codes? So the codes, you would say, are not for him. The codes are not for the spies. The codes are to make sure that the decision makers, Washington and other people, will not reveal by mistake the source. So
it's not just that, it's for security, as
you
said.
But the security, when I'm looking at it from the security, why do you give codes to people, or why do you do it? Because the person in the end who reads it, he by mistake might reveal who it's coming from. And you have to keep the person in a way where he's protected.
Mm-hmm.
So, because then if I'm looking, okay, you send a letter, you could have said the name. What does it make a difference? It makes a difference if the courier gets caught with it, it gets revealed.
Which is exactly a point that we're going to talk about right now. While they were still developing all of this techniques and everything, before they had the coded messages, there was a laborer in New York named Higday, and he helped free some prisoners, and he smuggled them across the river, some revolutionary officers. And word reached George Washington of his deeds, and he notified Benjamin Talmadge when he was forming the Culper Ring to bring in this guy Higday, right? Now, this correspondence between the two was then captured by the British in a letter taken off Benjamin Talmadge's horse saddle when they were ambushed and Benjamin Talmadge got away, but the letter was left on the horse saddle, which in the letter it named Higday. Now, what happened to Higday? Unfortunately, he was later arrested and we don't really know what happened to him afterwards.
But it shows you again
a little
why.
Bit, but we'll talk about that later. So anyway, that led to the implementation of the cipher code. You know, we don't want to name people. And actually, George Washington was very adamant later that he did not want to know the real names of the people involved.
Exactly. Because, you know, you as a leader, as a decision maker, one, it might influence your decision if you know it's someone you know.
Right.
And that is something you don't want to take in consideration when you make a decision at any level. And the second, you don't want, if it falls into the wrong hands, you don't want them to know who your agent is.
Right.
So if you're looking at that from a point of view, the codes were used more to make sure that the person who actually sees information, has to act upon it, doesn't reveal by mistake who it is.
For sure.
Now, even in today's world, it is done because leaders, and I won't mention names, by mistake might reveal information that other governments and other agencies will not be happy it revealed.
let's...
we will continue.
We're making looks at each other as if we know who we're referencing, which I think we do.
Referencing, but we're not referencing anyone. Not anyone in particular.
Okay. You play golf, by the way? All right. Moving on. So how might the pipeline of information have occurred? Information was often gathered by Culper Jr. or Culper Sr. in the beginning, and it was then curried or smuggled to Culper Sr. in Setauket, then smuggled out of New York by people like Brewster, the whaleboat captain, to Connecticut. Then a horse rider would get that information and bring it to George Washington, potentially through other, you know, people, but essentially it would get there after it was in safe hands. Also, messages were sent through newspapers, coded messages. Today, all of the Culper Ring spies' names are known, except for one, Agent 355. Now, there are 190 Culper spy letters that exist today that can be read. But who was Agent 355? Remember, that was kind of the topic. We kind of got sidetracked. So, I mean, who was Agent 355? Do you have any theories? You don't have to share them right now, but do you have ideas, strong opinions on this matter?
Let's continue.
No strong opinions, or you want to save them till later?
I'll save some of mine till later.
Okay, all right. Well, okay. So, 355. Who was this Agent 355, or Spy 355?
Because
Or who wasn't she is maybe a more interesting thing. Well, she worked with the Culper Ring, this much we know from the letter, during the Revolutionary War. She was most likely some kind of spy agent, more understanding for our words, recruited by Woodhull, so Culper Sr. The clues in the code might give us some direction. So 355 in the code meant the word lady. 701 meant the word woman. 351, for instance, meant lord. 599, for instance, meant servant. So what does that tell us? Well, it's lady and not woman, right? So lady in that time, rather than woman, connotates class or a certain social status, someone higher. You know, this isn't a maid or a girl. It's a lady, right? So that gives us some clues maybe as to who this person might be. Also, A355 is said in the letter, rather than only 355, meaning a lady rather than just lady. What does that tell us?
You think it's more than one? Or is it referring, it's a way to trick you to think it's only one, but actually there's more than one?
My opinion, and I don't know if I should share it now or later, is, I mean, I don't know, should I share it now or later? I don't know, what do you think?
We'll share it now and we'll contradict it later.
Okay. All right, well, I mean, my thing is the lady thing, so I'm assuming it's referring to some upper-class woman for sure, but then the A lady and the fact that it's 355, the numbering that it's used, and all the information that we have that we're going to explore later seems to me to indicate that it was a person that they were in contact with. I think the letter is referring to a specific lady at that time, but I don't think there was ever an agent 355, a spy 355, that was an official kind of like the seven numbers. You know, I think they had a network of people that they used, and we're going to be exploring all of them. But there wasn't one specific person who was the agent. I think they got their sources from other things, one of whom was a lady who was very resourceful, for sure. That's
okay.
My theory.
Good. Well, I think it has merit. But let's continue.
Let's continue, because we jumped the gun here. All right, so this 355 figure, referred in the letter at least, would have been likely living in New York or very frequently there. They played a prominent role in exposing the American Revolutionary officer Benedict Arnold as a traitor. Essentially, he was an officer for the American Revolution, fighting for the American independence, who later betrayed the revolution and tried to make a deal with the head of British intelligence in the United States, a British officer named John Andre. Now, 355 must have been close to John Andre, who was known to have a weakness for women. Now, that's not to say he was a philanderer, but he had a soft spot in his heart for women. It was a different time, of course. He thought women were oh so dainty and fair and not particularly capable of many things. So he was gentle to them, let's say, and not as cautious around them. They were the less capable sort in his mind.
He allowed himself to be more open about things that he was doing and boasting about it, not fearing that actually he should be more careful about what he says next to her.
Right.
And that is known as a fact.
That is a fact, yes. Now, when Andre would leave New York, the spy ring info seemed to cease to be useful, or certainly the usefulness of it diminished greatly. And when he returned, it became useful again. This is known facts. So these things together seem to indicate 355 was a person who might have had close correspondence or proximity to John Andre.
Now, that's a very important information, because in today's world, you would say there was something in the room that broadcast and gave information. The moment the person left the room, nothing was broadcast, and therefore there was no information.
Yeah.
So in this case, we're talking about a lady. A lady, because we know it's not a man.
Not a woman, not a servant, not a maid, but a lady.
We're calling her a lady.
Well, that's what the code called her.
Okay. A person who he felt comfortable enough to talk to. Now, the question again will be asked.
Or had proximity enough to hear.
Or hear, because there is a talking about hearing things. But it is interesting as well how easy she was able to move in and out from his house to deliver the information. Because if it's someone who is a domestic servant or someone who has to explain why she is going certain places, the ability to come in and out and reveal the information is much bigger. Now, does she write it in a code? I doubt that she ever wrote anything in a code. She just spoke verbally.
She spoke to Culper Sr. or Jr. or whoever was.
We don't know who she did, but
probably
she spoke to someone.
Robert Townsend.
Who then passed the message onwards.
Right.
Now, did that person mention, did he write it in a code or gave it as well verbally? And then only when it moved to Washington, it was given a code. We don't know that. We don't know if the people in the middle knew that she was 355 or the 355 was only a code to get to Washington so that he knows that this is the reliability of this information. 355 is someone close to the head of the intelligence. Therefore, any information
British
that comes from the British intelligence, therefore, any information that comes from her, as he mentioned specifically, that he's hoping to get information from her or from that source, is the one they're waiting for, because that's what he said in his first chapter. That means they valued very much the information that she was able to bring.
I intend to visit 727 New York before long and think by the assistance of a 355 of a lady of my acquaintance shall be able to outwit them all. That's the letter. That's the only direct reference
right.
we have.
Yes. That means that he had to, as well, come and see her. He felt that it's okay to meet her. Someone that she felt comfortable to be with. And he was not seen in the premises, because if he would be seen there, that wouldn't have been a clever thing to do or the right thing to do.
The American chief spy in New York.
No, you don't go into his house and knock on the door. So that means this lady didn't live there.
Live where?
With the chief, the British head of intelligence, because obviously it would have been more, not so flexible for her to move in and out.
But if
while
she was
he
a lady,
there,
she'd be able to
move in and out. So you would say she's not a domestic worker.
Right. Well, maybe. We're jumping because there's some theories. So
I know.
Let's get to the theories in a second.
Get to the theories and then I'll
because there's a lot of very interesting things to discuss. Okay, so the story goes, the myth goes, that a pregnant Agent 355 was eventually arrested and held prisoner on a British ship, where she may have given birth to a boy. Some say Robert Townsend Jr.'s son or daughter. We don't know. Now, did she die on the ship? We don't know. There are many who disagree with this because, well, a number of reasons. Women were not kept on prisoner ships, and there were no records of a birth on a ship. Now, the British were quite diligent record keepers, but then again, as we all know, sometimes people like to omit certain details that are not as flattering. There was also a letter, not directly referencing to 355, though some have said that it corresponds to her, that after a number of arrests in New York, a letter was written that said, "One who hath been ever serviceable to this correspondence was captured." So is that referencing 355? Maybe. We don't have the exact number, but there have been statements that that is in reference to that 355. Now, when 355 was captured, Robert Townsend Jr., who may have been the father of her child, stole from a bunch of businesses he had connections to, including his own father's, and vowed to stop spying. Why did he steal? Because he wanted to pay a ransom, supposedly, to free Agent 355, who he was presumably in love with. So in 10 days, he gathered £600, which was the equivalent to about $156,000, to pay for 355's release. Apparently after 355's death, which, as we've said, is rumored to have happened, Robert Staunton Jr. became depressed and lived life as an alcoholic. So that's really all we have. We have those two mentions. Woodhull informing Chief Intelligence Talmadge of the arrest of several our dear friends, including one who hath been ever serviceable to this correspondence, maybe Agent 355, and the letter we read in the beginning, and again, a few minutes ago. Of the 193 surviving letters written by the Culper Ring, only one directly contains reference to any woman specifically.
This woman you were talking about, how many other children did she have?
Agent 355?
No, the one that was pregnant.
We don't know. No. There's theories, right?
Okay, no, but there's one woman there that... Okay.
We'll get to the people. So right. Before we get to the specific candidates that we have lined up behind door number 1, 2, 3, et cetera, there's just one final figure to kind of just address in this whole mystery, and that's John Andre, the major in the British Army, and he was the head of the British espionage in New York. He's key to understanding who might have been Agent 355. So when he was in New York, the Culper Ring had lots of intel. When he was out, the info stopped. When he returned back, of course, the info came back again. Now, he negotiated with Benedict Arnold to surrender West Point, which was a military base, for £20,000, about $4 million in today's money. And that was the big betrayal that Agent 355 was involved in helping to find out about. After the information reached Washington because of Agent 355's actions, Andre was actually captured. He was arrested. And at that point, the British then rounded up a bunch of suspects in New York, and the Culper Ring hid till things cooled down because they realized that obviously there was a leak in information somehow. Agent 355's leaked information helped lead to John Andre's capture on neutral grounds while he was carrying documents with the plans of the capture of West Point on him. So, not good to carry plans on you that incriminate you. Andre was later hanged. As we said, there was no remorse back in those days.
Wasn't recruited to be a double agent.
No, he was not recruited to be a double agent.
No,
missed opportunity, right?
Missed opportunity.
Or he was potentially just too loyal to the cause, right?
Maybe, but that was part of the engagement at the time.
Or you could think that Benedict Arnold could have been recruited as a double agent.
We don't know what Benedict Arnold happened to him, do we?
Well, he was also off with his head. I mean, I don't know if they killed him, but he was... You know,
he didn't get the money.
He didn't get the money. He didn't get off easy.
And West Point never...
West Point did not fall. No.
Exactly.
No.
Okay. So...
So who are our candidates for Agent 355? Finally, we're there. We have Anna Strong. She's highly suspected to have been 355. Anna Strong presented herself as a Tory loyalist. Remember Tory? That means supporting of the British crown. She was a neighbor of Abraham Woodhull, Culper Sr., and accompanied him on occasion to New York. Now, the theory is she might have diverted attention from Woodhull on his trips. Or was she simply traveling to New York to visit her husband? Now, her husband was also a patriot and involved in the Culper Ring. He was eventually captured and held on a British prison ship. Anna was able to get aboard to feed him. Maybe that's why it was identified at one point that there was a woman on board of a prison ship, because she was there to feed him. Was she pregnant? Did she give birth on a ship? She had 10 children over her lifetime, so that's quite a lot. Maybe she was. Maybe that's how the story goes, or the story evolved. Anna managed to get her husband paroled due to contacts with her Tory relatives. So she did have contacts with Tory relatives, so maybe that's how she was able to get information. That's why she was 355, maybe. It's said that Anna's role in the Culper Ring was to relay signals, however, about the location of smuggler landings by Caleb Brewster, our smuggler, to Woodhull and a nearby farm. There were 6 different codes for secret landings, and she would hang her black petticoat on her clothesline, which was visible from the water and Woodhull's nearby farm. And then she would add a number of handkerchiefs, depending on which of the 6 coves was safest to use for the smuggler landing. So this whole clothesline signal thing is a great story, but it's not confirmed by anywhere. Her husband was also on a list to be reimbursed by Washington after the war for his service. So speculation exists if maybe it was actually for Anna, since the husband was imprisoned during the time period related to the payments, as we said earlier. Or was the payment simply for his services and the fact that he was imprisoned? These are all questions. The big question mark onto if she was 355, would she really have been likely to have been a companion or frequent company of John Andre, who was an eligible bachelor, at one point named the most eligible bachelor in New York, and had the most beautiful and desirable women and socialites in New York frequenting his companionship? I mean, she was the wife of some guy in prison and the mother of 10 children, and she was visiting from Setauket. I don't know, it seems a little unlikely in my mind, even though a lot of historians have said that she was the most likely candidate for 355. She was from a well-to-do family, so it would have been designated to call her a lady. Sure. Thoughts?
If you have so many opportunities, the first thing that will come in mind is not a woman that has 10 children. Even though the opportunity is there because her husband is in prison, so therefore there's no one she has to answer to at that time. Now, if you get pregnant and go in there, but you need, at those times, at least you need two people to get pregnant.
Oh, so, you're saying that maybe she became pregnant by not her husband, and maybe, let's say, John Andre, let's say.
Maybe.
Okay, interesting
but we don't
theory.
Know. I mean, that's just, we don't know what stage of pregnancy she was in, but if she gave birth, that means it's 9 months. If you look at it 9 months, that means when she gave the information, she was pregnant already. Because she was not held in the prison, in the ship for 6 months before she died. We don't know that.
Well, she wasn't held. So she wasn't held. So this is where the conflating stories come in, because there were other women and different things.
But she gave birth on the ship.
Maybe we don't know this.
Okay. But
this is how the mixing of rumors and myth come
in. I don't want to dig into that bit, but I just want to raise questions from that aspect of it just to confuse the situation. But my thinking would be that a person like Andre would probably have...
John Andre, yeah.
Yeah, John Andre would probably have other women that he could have had a relationship with that maybe were not so engaged with children and pregnancy.
She seems an unlikely candidate. I mean, we're not saying that John Andre had a relationship with Agent 355 in a sexual sense, but it seems unlikely, in my mind anyway, and I think in your mind too, that a person whose husband was imprisoned on a ship... He was still the British chief of intelligence, so maybe you would have known this, would socialize with some woman who had 10 children and was traveling. I mean, it doesn't seem likely. She's not a socialite.
Because you have to look as well at the kind of information that she was getting. If it was something that everybody relied on, that means it's something that...
And she wasn't living in New York.
She wasn't living. She was visiting. And she should have only visited when he was around. It is possible it was her, but let's see the other candidates.
Right. So... My theory on her is that she was definitely a valuable, let's call it asset, because maybe that would be a more apt term for the time period, to the Culpa Ring, and she helped, and probably with the smuggling thing, maybe clothesline thing, maybe happened, maybe didn't, but that's how she was involved. And the story of her pregnancy and on the boat eventually got conflated to maybe create the mythos around this singular agent, 355.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Our next candidate is a woman named Sarah Sally Townsend. She was the sister of Robert Townsend, Culpert Jr., 723. Now, the British officers were stationed in the Townsend's New York home, and John Andre was a frequent visitor there. One British officer, named Simcoe, was in love with Sarah, and he wrote her a letter asking her to be his Valentine. This is actually supposed to be the first ever U.S. Valentine's letter that we have in the United States. Unfortunately for Simcoe, Sarah did not choose him. But it was a very difficult decision, with words such as, "Fairest maid, where all is fair, beauty's pride and nature's care, to you my heart I must resign. Oh, choose me for your Valentine. Love, mighty God, thou knowest full well where all thy mother's graces dwell, where thy inhabit and combine to fix thy power with spells divine.
Thou knowest what powerful magic lies within the round of Sarah's eyes.
It goes on and on for a bit, but that was part of his Valentine's letter, if you didn't guess by now. Now, it would have been easy for Sarah to overhear information and pass it along to her brother. Correct. As the stories go, she once overheard how Andre and Simcoe were discussing how the British would capture West Point due to a traitorous turncoat American officer, Benedict Arnold. That seems like a pretty convincing correlation to me. Now, since the officers were stationed in the Townsends' home, they were clearly a well-to-do family. You wouldn't station officers in a modest home, right? Not back then, anyway. Making Sarah more likely to be called a lady rather than a woman. Also, finally, in the Raynham Hall Museum, they feature a preserved window pane where a British officer scratched messages to the adorable Miss Sally Townsend, which seems to indicate that she was a rather desirable lady. Now, after her death, Sarah still had Simcoe's letter in her possession. Was she 355? To me, Sarah is probably the best candidate. And all the other stories get conflated, I think, with other things, and they might have assisted with different aspects of spying.
I would put it in a different way. I would say, if you now had to run a network and you had to now choose where's the best place to get information from,
yeah,
and where would you go to, and who would be most had the best chances of getting information that others won't? Now, you have here, one, an opportunity, two, accessibility. Three, she has her natural talents that she had that enabled other people to want her company. And four, it's something that is legitimate. She had a house where they were staying. She didn't have to go somewhere. They came to her. That means that anyone could come there or she could go out. And when the people were not there, she had no information because there was no one to talk to. Now, if she had lovers or people who were pursuing her, obviously, with a couple of nice words, she could get information out of them, like is very possible to do. And if you look about her brother then being very upset about things, okay, we don't know if it's one, what happened there, and if it's connected, but she did live afterwards. So she was not, as far as I know, she was not one of the people who was rounded up, or was she?
She did not die. We don't know if she was rounded up or what potential momentary in capture she might have experienced. But there's
when certainly... When the British decided to capture everybody, she was not one of the people that...
As far as we know, she was not on the list yeah. of people. I mean, to me, as you said, it's like, what's the thing about murder? You need the motive, and you need the opportunity, and you need, you know, the access and all this kind of stuff. So to me, those things that you just said, they really fit. Wouldn't be hard. She was in the house where the officers were. Andre was a frequent visitor. Her brother was part of the network. She could overhear things. She could tell her brother it wasn't suspect because she was there. She was charming. She was elegant. She was a lady. Easy. It fits. She maybe didn't even have to work that hard. You know, old houses.
She didn't have to do anything. She just
old
had
houses
to be there.
With wooden walls. I mean, I don't know how.
No, you're just talking to the guy. You know what's happening, what's new, and he would spill the beans.
Or overhear things. Happens. You know, yes. also yeah. potentially not yes. that difficult. Yes. So to me, she is definitely.
A very good candidate.
Very good candidate.
And if she wasn't, she should have been recruited.
I mean, I'm sure she got... I'm sure she had some information to her brother.
Okay.
Right? And also, she clearly had potentially mixed loyalties here because she didn't go with Simcoe, who was an eligible bachelor as well and all this kind of stuff. Nice Valentine's letter. But she kept the letter, right? So maybe in her heart, she was conflicted. She wanted to maybe be with him, but because he was a Tory, he was British... But her loyalties in her mind were for the patriots and the revolution. So,
or she might have kept the letter to show that she is a loyalist, but actually she isn't, just to show to prove it.
Maybe.
It could be played different ways.
Maybe.
But sometimes we're too sophisticated, and I don't think we have to be too sophisticated in this. This was an amateur, in a way, network. It wasn't a sophisticated network. It was people he trusted.
Right.
It's people he didn't have time too much to train because right. they were not like in a spy school and they had 3 months or 6 months of going right. through things. He had to find people that he knew won't betray him. and he wants to keep it a close fit and closer to him.
It's not, as you say, it's not like the Pinkertons later with Lincoln, who he had like resources and he hired the best people from like detectives and this and that and private organization. Different situation.
So I would say very good candidate, fits all the
very good candidate, I would say. That said, I still don't believe Agent 355 was a singular individual. I don't think there was an Agent 355.
Okay.
I think there was a useful lady among other useful ladies. But let's get on to our next candidate for Agent 355, Elizabeth Bergen. Now, she was a war widow with three children who had often brought food to Patriot prisoners on British ships in New York. Aha, we have the ship aspect, which we didn't just have with our lovely Sally. She was contacted by a laborer in New York named Higday, as I said earlier, our friend Higday, who helped free prisoners. Unfortunately, when Higday was later arrested because of the message being intercepted, Higday's wife told the British about Elizabeth Bergen attempting to help her husband. Elizabeth had to flee the city to avoid getting caught, and there was a 200-pound ransom for her capture. It's said that her efforts had, by some accounts, helped free 200 Patriot prisoners from warships. Now, how was this done? It has not been revealed to this day. Was it that she helped them by simply feeding them, or did she distract guards or open locks or hide things in food that she was bringing them? All we know is that accounts say that she went to feed people on British ships, and it's said that she helped 200 Patriots. We don't know how. Another mystery. She was awarded a pension by George Washington for her services. That said, we have no reason to believe that she had any contact with John Andre or the Culper Ring after it was formed. Again, the whole message was intercepted beforehand. But that said, people still do think that Elizabeth Bergen is potentially a candidate, and I can see why. She was in New York, at least. More access to John Andre, that's say. She was on the prisoner ships. She helped do a bunch of stuff. But again, we have this problem of here's a widow with three children, again, caught up in a little controversy with things later. Maybe before she could have had contact with John Andre. How? We don't exactly know. If she was bringing food to prisoners, that means she was well off, so she might have had extra resources, so she might have been considered a lady and not just a woman. What do you think?
Well, she is a good candidate in some ways, but it doesn't fit some of the time schedule that you're looking at and the connections and the contacts. Because if you look again at the specific paper that we're looking at, someone who has reliable and capabilities of getting information that is necessary for a specific time. I mean, he is going to New York to
and
speak.
And by the assistance of a 355 of my acquaintance shall be able to outwit them all.
Yes. And I don't see her in that category.
Again, I would see her more as an asset.
Yes.
A person, but not as the agent 355 kind of.
Correct.
Ingenue, let's call it.
Yes. You have any others?
But maybe not. Maybe she is.
You have
other candidates? I have two more candidates for you.
Two more.
I know. We're going through them.
Okay.
We have Lydia Darrah. Now, in 19, that's a lot. Very old lady. No. In 1776, during secret meetings at her home in Philadelphia, not New York, she overheard John Andre talking of an attack on Washington. Now, why was this meeting happening at her home? Because Lydia Darrah's husband was a Tory loyalist. Lydia Darrah, on the other hand, was not. Eavesdropping at the door, she relayed messages that reached Washington, who prepared for an attack. She would presumably hide messages under large covered buttons on scraps of paper with her younger son, who would then deliver them to his elder brother, who served in the American Revolutionary Army. This is a very messy war, families torn and this and that. Now, John Andre later went to question everyone at the Darrah household after the leak, except Lydia, since he believed that all women held the same values and views as their husbands. And her husband was a Tory. Hence that John Andre soft spot for women. What do you think? Is she a candidate?
Obviously, she wouldn't have been a candidate, otherwise she wouldn't have been mentioned. But again, it brings us to the theory that it's not one person.
It does. And the biggest flaw for her candidacy, I would say, is that her home was in Philadelphia.
Yes.
Whereas in the letter,
and again,
he's going to New York.
Using the children with buttons and sending messages. I think the specific messages that were received verbally from someone who heard them and not from a third, because of the...
To me, Sally, you know, it also connects then later with her brother being enraged potentially if she was in danger in a ransom, all that kind of stuff. And maybe, you know, maybe the information that we don't have, you know, let's create the Hollywood best-selling screenplay, which is she gets captured and rounded up afterwards as a suspect. He rounds up all that money, and he goes to Simcoe, the British officer who loves her. And through Simcoe's strings pulling, he's able to get Sally away. But alas, starstruck lovers unable to unite, their love never came to. You know, so many things fall in place when you have Sarah.
Last candidate, please.
You don't like my ruminessing?
No.
My ruminessing?
I do like it, but I think we want guessing?
To,
we want to get to understand who done it.
Who done it? Who done it? So Lydia Dara, I think, is a lovely asset for the Culper Ring, but not Agent 355. And again, as I've said numerous times at this point, I don't think there was a singular Agent 355. I think it was different people doing different things. Our final candidate is a woman named Elizabeth Liz. She was the former slave of the Townsend family. Now, in the massively accurate historical television show Turn, Washington Spies, the TV show casts her in a major espionage role. As I said, she was the former slave of the Townsend family. She escaped due to help from an abolitionist British colonel, but was enslaved again by an unknown person. At the same time, Townsend became the chief spymaster in Manhattan. It's been suggested that she was a mole among the British, unnoticed and given intel back to Townsend. But why would you give info to your former slave master? Apparently, when Liz was sold, it was to a brutal owner, and Townsend brought her back. Was she actually freed? Was her escape a ruse? Does TV know best? Does Turn Washington Spies tell an accurate story? What do you think of her as a candidate?
I don't.
I mean, to me, the biggest glaring thing here is the lady aspect. Not to mince words, but I don't think at that time she would have been referred to as a lady unless it was a code.
No, it's not specifically lady. I don't think she had the ear of Andre. I don't think that she would be in a position to get crucial information that's useful.
Well, let me devil's advocate you. She's scrubbing in the corner because she's a slave and no one takes notice of her, especially Andre, because she's a woman. Or she's serving them tea, you know, because they need tea.
It's nice in the novels. It's nice, but I don't think, I wouldn't think that's, you based your, all your, you don't have a good, you don't use up the whole number on a coincidental information you might get from someone scrubbing a floor at that period. In my opinion, that's not what
But the number
for.
Wasn't a specific person. I mean, the number is not,
that's why
355 is not the 7, you know, 26s and things. It's
But there's a reason why they were never found who the person was.
Because it wasn't one person.
Because it wasn't one person.
In my opinion, you agree with me?
I would say it's there was one leader that was
the biggest candidate.
The biggest candidate. And if it's not her, they use that as a to say for a number of reasons. As well, maybe they didn't want to show that they're using women.
Right.
As well onwards for different reasons. It's different times, different period. Women were not maybe seen at that time as someone that they could rely on. So why give it, why use, rely on one woman? But I think that the fact that they got the information and they got the good information is correct. Was the 355 a specific person? I would think that it refers to the women information and not a specific woman information.
I would say in that letter, he's referring to a specific woman.
Yes.
Was that specific woman an agent? No. Was she an asset? A person that they had used frequently? Yes. Was there an agent 355? No. There were lots of women who did lots of really important work and amazing things. In that particular letter, he's referring to one of them.
I'll ask you this, Omri. From all the people that, all the ladies that you mentioned, which one of the ladies do you think would have brought in the most and best information?
Sally.
Okay.
Hands down.
Okay. Then would she have a number? Why shouldn't she have a number?
She would have a number if she was an agent, if she was a spy, if she was deemed
She
that
brought
kind of
in
thing.
Information. She had all the capabilities to bring in the information. She had all the opportunities, all the right connections, the right place, everything ticks the boxes. Why didn't she have a specific number? That I don't know. Did she have a specific number? Is that her number? Then what about all the other women? Why did not they did not get a number? Another question mark. I don't know. So Or we can say she is the woman, 355, or we could say the 355 relates to kind of source, and the source is a lady, meaning the specific women who are able to bring information.
I mean, I don't know what the number for.
And then you mix it up with pregnancy, right, and ships and everything together.
Look, I don't know what the number was for gentlemen, right? But it could have just as easily been, I went to New York and I will be through the assistance of a gentleman, you know, seven, not seven, but like 5-2, whatever, have well, out with them all. And then that in that instance, that would be referring to a specific gentleman who was assisting them. But that doesn't mean that that gentleman was...
I'll ask you another question from your research that you've done or from what you've read. And
just
I didn't
before
see
you
it.
Do that, just to close on Elizabeth.
You want to close on? Okay.
The slave, from my research, the only corroboration that I've found also for her being involved is from this TV show, which I don't know what their okay. research is, but I'm sure they have more resources than me to research. So anyway, that's what we know about her as well. Anyway, please continue. Okay.
Yes. Well, do we know if occasionally other male informants were given a number, or they're all put in like in a package and said, okay, these are people that I picked up information
from
somewhere else.
You mean what we would call today as agents or assets rather than
because
spies.
If you say everybody had a number, not everybody had a number. So was there like a bank of, okay, all the people from this club will give it number 7. So all the names from that club will give it number 9. But no, what we understand is every number was specifically to a person, not to some males in a certain location.
Not every number. 711 through 726. Sorry, 711 through 726, not 711, what we could buy at these days, but 711 to 726, which is 15 numbers, 17 if you include 26 and 11, right? Were proper names, referred to proper. Those were the people that were maybe on a payroll officially,
right?
Were like the people, right? Now, did they have contacts that they used and all those kind of people and frequent contacts, and were lines maybe blurred at certain points?
That means that maybe each one of them had more informants and more people, but they were like heading a network,
cells, let's call
of
them.
4 or 5 people.
Sure.
4 or 5 people who gave them information. So you right. could say that maybe 355 was the lady cell, that any information that came from ladies was referred in or women was referred to that agent to give it a certain color.
I mean, you could also say woman, right? I mean, let's take Lydia Dara, for instance, who was in the home of Philadelphia, overheard, sent a message. Great, she's a contact. When she has something for us, great. We'll call her. She's a lady.
Yeah, but how was she referred to? What number?
We don't know. Number. She wasn't referred. You referred to her, you would say a lady in Philadelphia, right? So Philadelphia might have been 273. So 273, and I got a 355 from 273, you know, contact. And in that sense, it would be referring to Lydia. Anyway, okay. I don't know. It's very good questions.
Okay. What is you want to come to some conclusion, or you want me to say what I think, not only in that aspect, but I want to bring the big question up. Because I have a big question to bring to raise, and that comes from this discussion.
Sure. I will say that an unknown British general was quoted as saying, "Washington did not beat us militarily. He simply outspied us."
Well,
what? I don't think he said what. But, no,
but let me, on the serious note, and this yes. was serious,
yes.
but if you want to summarize it in a certain way, the big question, you know, the big question, in my opinion, I would like to raise in this podcast is, at what stage you decide that the intelligence that you gathered and you act upon will sacrifice your sources or your source?
Mm-hmm.
And I think this is the big question and the interesting question that was raised here. Because what Washington did is he decided to act according to what the intelligence told him to. That means that he decided at a certain point that this information was too crucial mm-hmm. to let it go. He had to act upon it.
Right.
Now, by acting upon it, he actually showed he has assets.
Exactly.
Or he has someone who is able mm-hmm. to give him information. So he has to make a decision. Does he sacrifice all these assets? Because eventually what happened, the British rounded up all the people they thought were suspicious, all behind it. And therefore, since that moment, there was no more information coming in, no more intelligence. Now, he could have done something else and kept the if he knew that the intelligence is there, maybe do something else to avoid the capture or avoid the suspicion. So The big question that comes from here, and it wasn't mentioned anywhere, is at what stage did Washington, if at all, think, if I act, I'm going to sacrifice all the network I have there? Was it ever a debate? And that's a very interesting question about it.
Fascinating. We don't know.
And it comes back again to using the codes. If he would have known who it is and he knew her, would he have made the same decision?
Right.
So by having codes and not making it personalizing it, it makes it easier for the decision maker to make the decision that is right on the merit of the information and not have any emotional decision making in his decision to do whatever he has to do. Even today, you want the decision made not to be done because someone knows someone or he thinks sorry about it, or, ah, she's pregnant and you're going to give, now there's going to be 10 children without orphans, or I'm going to, there'll be a whole family wiped out, or the whole village, or whatever. Big moral questions that the British had to answer afterwards in Second World War, when they had to decide what to do when you have information that could save lives, but on the other hand, you're going to jeopardize your sources. This is the big question here, in my opinion, the big question that Washington did not have to address at the time because he didn't need to. But if you look at the source of it, if you look at really where it leads to, it's you use codes to protect your agent. But if you will give information that afterwards sacrifices your agents, what does it mean? And I think this is the big question here in this story, not only who's 355, but was it worth sacrificing the whole network for that? Did that make a change and tip around the Civil War? Was that a big difference that changed the morale or got someone who was very dangerous and got him out of position?
With West Point, that was huge. And I think that's why that was acted on.
It's huge, and betrayal, and you're sending a message to everybody. And then again, remember, there was an Americans as well. So Andre was an American, wasn't a British officer, as far as I understand.
Andre was British.
Officer. Yeah. So he was replaced by another British officer. So do you have someone close to him? Apparently not. We don't know. But there's no story about, the next guy that was there, or the Americans felt strong enough that they didn't need to. So these questions are intelligence questions that are asked from the intelligence information that you bring in. So it's not only the information that you bring in, is how you react to it. And reacting to intelligence is an art. How you do it, what you do with it, how do you protect your assets? One thing is protecting them the way Benjamin did, is making sure that they don't, the information that's moved from one place to another is not compromised. The other thing is, when you get the information, what do you do with it and how do you protect your assets because of it?
Right. Very good. There's a wonderful scene actually in Darkest Hour depicting Churchill's decision to not act upon some information he receives during World War II about Germans going to bomb a naval ship. And one of the officers with him in the war room, when he decides, we can't act upon it because if we do, then they'll know that we've cracked the code, blah, blah, blah. And the officer, I think it was like their son or something.
His brother.
Brother is on that ship.
Yeah.
And so it's like, it highlights that dilemma, that what do you do when you have the information? And of course, if he didn't know his brother was on, that would be easier, but you're still dealing with lives,
Yes.
Difficult decisions to make. Very difficult decisions to make. Clearly, they decided at that point that it was the correct thing to do, to act upon the information they received. And spoiler alert, the American Revolution won. So I guess it was the right decision at the end of the day, in the long term. Right?
Yes.
Let me ask you some questions, if I may. They recruited from their hometown. The Culper Ring is essentially made up of people, friends, who grew up together from their hometown. Unsuspecting agents, farmers, merchants, boatmen, simple folk. Does this seem like a smart move to you? Recruit from the same people, simple people who might not have all the skills that you might expect would be required?
Well,
what's the advantages? What's the disadvantage there?
Well, we don't want to make this a big conversation, a big discussion, but because we discussed a little bit on it earlier. But we have to remember the times. It's not the same times as now. Second, any information, as we said,
it's not 3:05 p.m.?
No. And even Sun Tzu, we talked about him. You need people on the ground. You need to understand what the people think.
The types of agents.
Sometimes you need to know what's going on. And the intelligence that was necessary was very local, was very very specific to very... wasn't understanding the big strategy of the British forces. No, it was if there's a movement of somebody, if someone's moving, if someone's talking of doing something. It was low-key intelligence. So low-key intelligence, you have specific people who could do them because they are in a positions to do it. Now, why did he recruit the people he did? One, he couldn't trust others. If he started to recruit someone and they betrayed him, everything is gone. So he had to keep it simple and had to keep it to people he trusted, like we said in the beginning. Mm-hmm. So he had not didn't have a lot of time, and he had to trust his villagers. So it's the right thing to do. Is it for long term? If the British understand that this guy is recruiting only from this village or this town, then you round out the town and you find out everybody else.
Yeah, and you then, see who his friends are, you round them up.
And that's it. Yeah. And then it's all over. So there's a risk there. So you don't want to put all your eggs in one basket.
Of the suspected people for Agent 355, would there have been any for you that would have been an easy recruit?
First of all, there's nothing like an easy recruit. Okay? There's everything, every person stands on his own. Something that could look easy to one, making it difficult to another, you tackle it in a different angles each time. So there's no such thing as easy recruit. You have to decide who is worthwhile, the information he will be getting is worthwhile investing in. And I think the Townsend lady, Sally, was the one that could bring in the long run, the more interesting and...
consistent.
Not only consistent, but reliable information that you can trust, and that the information came to her. She didn't have to go out and get it.
Interestingly, we discussed double agents for a moment there. You know, John Andre, you mentioned at a moment, I said, you know, Benedict Arnold himself. What about Simcoe? The love interest that Sally had. Let's say you recruit Sally. Could that have been a potential target if you were running this operation? You think, this guy's in love with her.
No.
Why not?
Because he's giving information without being recruited.
So not reliable enough.
No, he's reliable.
For you already.
It makes it easier. I don't want to compromise Sally. Mm-hmm. He's giving the information willingly. He's sending letters. He's opening up his heart. If he gave information out, not necessarily you have to recruit someone to get information from him.
Right. So there was a necessity for codes then, obviously for security and all that kind of stuff. Is there still a necessity for code names and all that jazz today?
Well, we answered that. Yes, of course. But for many reasons. When something is broken or someone manages to hack you or manages to get inside your systems, you want to have another layer of protection.
But, I mean, I'm playing devil's advocate because I kind of know already. But, you know, in the old days, I remember payphones were a really big part of your life. You know, it was very important to find payphones because you have different places you can operate from that way, right? It's not the same consistent hub.
It's communications anyway. I mean, pigeons were a very important act as well.
But you wouldn't want to use the same pigeon in the same
place
every time, right? Now,
so exactly, you don't use the same phones. You don't use the same telephone box,
right?
For the same reason. Exactly. You don't look the same pigeon. You don't
except
the same
now we have cell phones, and payphones are not everywhere, and people carry cell phones,
right?
Even spies.
So you have to, or you have to have devices to make sure that someone can't listen
hack
to
it,
you,
okay,
or hack it, but
or you change your cell phones. I mean, drug dealers have
so many things. I don't even go of so many things you can do or not do,
right?
But you would think the better way is to walk around without a phone.
You would think.
So think.
Yes, you would think. Okay. So we'll end, as we often do, with a little dramatization. This is George Washington in a letter to the President of Congress dated September 24th, 1776. The necessity of procuring good intelligence is apparent and need not be further urged. All that remains for me to add is that you would be pleased to impress upon the minds of the committee the importance of the thing, and the disadvantage we labor under for want of it. Upon this, and upon every occasion, I have experienced great embarrassment from the want of it, and have, in more instances than one, been obliged to undertake enterprises of the most critical nature upon the most vague and uncertain information, when the means of obtaining positive knowledge were within our reach. Intelligence, it's important.
It is.
Gotta have it.
Have to.
This was Spies and Lies. Thanks for listening. And remember,
keep your sources to yourself.
And we're not just talking about ketchup. Spies and Lies is a Grumpy Golem production, with original scoring and mastering by Julian Dussault. If you enjoyed listening, don't forget to share with your friends and leave a comment or review wherever you listen from. If you have any questions or subjects you'd like for my father and I to cover, drop us a message, and we'll do our best to get back to you. Until next time.
Ever Googled your own name? Prepare for a shock because your personal info, including addresses and phone numbers, is out there, especially with the recent hacks at some big phone and healthcare companies. But here's where Aura steps in. Aura scans the dark web for your sensitive information and sends real-time alerts. Aura also actively requests that your information be removed from data broker sites, putting you back in control. Aura provides you with a complete online safety toolkit, credit and transaction monitoring, a secure password manager, a privacy-enhancing VPN, and more. Try Aura risk-free with a 14-day trial at aura.com/safety. That's aura.com/safety. Rest easy with Aura. Visit aura.com/safety today.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Welcome back to Two Judgy Girls. I'm Mary from the Bay.
And I'm Courtney from LA. TJG is the podcast where we spill all the tea on your favorite reality TV shows, celebrity gossip, and everything in between. We're here to bring you our unfiltered opinions, hilarious commentary, and plenty of laughs along the way.
We're two SDSU Delta Gamma sisters with a microphone and a whole lot of opinions. Each week, we dive headfirst into the wild world of reality television, from Bravo to all the trash TV you could want. We break down the drama, dissect the latest scandals, and share our thoughts on everything from the jaw-dropping moments to the embarrassing antics.
But that's not all. We're not here to just gossip. We're here to connect with you, the jurors, and share our love of all things pop culture. Whether we're dishing on the latest celebrity breakups, discussing our favorite guilty pleasure movies, or sharing embarrassing stories from our own lives, we promise to keep it real, keep it fun, and keep you coming back for more.
Come judge with us.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.